1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Andy Field. Civil rights leaders angered about the shooting of 16-year-old Ralph Yarl when he went to the wrong home to pick up his siblings. Dr. Reverend Vernon Howard is president of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference.
When he was shot last week, Jim Crow came face to face with black joy.
84-year-old Andrew Lester charged with first-degree assault and armed criminal action. A $787 million settlement. That's the number reached in the defamation lawsuit Dominion Voting Systems brought against Fox News over false claims of rigged voting in the 2020 election.
The truth matters.
Dominion attorney Justin Nelson says lies have consequences. Court records show a Tennessee man and his mother have been convicted on charges of storming the Capitol with plastic zip ties during the January 6th insurrection. This is ABC News. Fallout for a rising star accused of domestic violence.
Jonathan Majors has been dropped by his longtime management company, Entertainment 360. That according to multiple reports. His PR firm, The Lead Company, is also no longer working with the Creed star, who also had a major role in the recent Ant-Man movie, setting Majors up as the major bad guy who would theoretically be featured in several upcoming Marvel movies. Majors was arrested last month in New York on assault and other charges after a woman claimed Majors attacked her. His lawyers say the 33-year-old actor is completely innocent. He's due in court in May. Jason A. And ABC News, Hollywood.
Alaska Airlines is investing $2.5 billion in new technology to help streamline the airport check-in process. The goal? Get passengers from the lobby to security in 5 minutes or less. A second member of the K-pop sensation BTS has entered a South Korean boot camp. 29-year-old J-Hope is starting an 18-month compulsory military service. He was cheered on by fans who showed up near the entrance of his boot camp. Andy Field, ABC News.
The talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Congressman Tom Tiffany is looking like a potential candidate for U.S. Senate. He bought two website names, ThomasTiffanyForSenate.com and TomTiffanyForSenate.com. Tiffany says he's weighing his options. Tiffany is in his second term in the U.S. House. Baldwin announced a re-election bid last week. So far, there are no declared Republican challengers. The leaders of Wisconsin's two-year branch campuses are being told to look at ways to make them financially stable. UW System President Jay Rothman says everything is on the table. That includes adding bachelor's degrees or continuing education programs. The audits are part of Rothman's wider strategic plan for the system. In sports, the Brewers beat Seattle last night 7-3. Colin Rhea starts for Milwaukee tonight. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
VA has a new life insurance program for veterans with service-connected disabilities called Veterans Affairs Life Insurance, or VA Life. VA Life benefits include up to $40,000 in coverage, no medical questions to enroll, and no time limit to apply if you are age 80 or under. Veterans can apply, receive an instant decision, and manage their policy online. Learn more about VA Life or apply online by visiting va.gov/life-insurance. Protect those who matter most with VA Life Insurance.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid. Dude, did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Your hometown radio, refreshed. keeping you informed, entertained, and connected on the Civic Media Network, civicmedia.us. Looking for more local programming? Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
He's the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown.
Where can you go where it's always a standard room only? You ain't gonna find that in Chicago.
It's never personal, only politics.
You ain't gonna find that in Minnesota, standing room only, because you can go to the gumball machine, stick a quarter in there, out come ticket.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
That's the way it is, man. We love football, fans love us.
Weekdays 4 to 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
Podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
What a world we're in right now. You got a state senator from Missouri saying he knows 12-year-olds who have been married. You got a state like Iowa who at 5:42 in the morning passed one of the worst child labor laws in the entire country, like thieves in the night. But remember, they love the children. Especially when they can marry them at 12 years old and they can get them to work for cheap wages. That's all I got for you. And this comes up because someone we've had on the show a couple of times, our friend Sammy Sheets, we met him on the road back during the Working Class Heroes radio tour, was doing a site visit at a construction site and just happened to come across what looked like a child working in construction. And here to share some thoughts on, well, where this is, why it is, how it is, and maybe what we do to make sure it doesn't happen. I've asked Iowa State Representative Sammy Sheets to come share some thoughts with us. Sammy, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks so much for having me again, Rick.
So am I getting this right? You're doing a site visit of this big construction project that the state's given a boatload of money to, that the locality's given a boatload of money to, and you got a child working on the construction site? Is that right?
Potentially. Yeah. So what we were doing is we were doing a day with the Carpenters Union in Cedar Rapids, and they wanted to show us the difference between a union job site and a non-union job site in terms of cleanliness, in terms of the safety protocols, et cetera. So we toured a union job site, which was really spectacular, that's being built in South Cedar Rapids. And we went to this job site, and I think they obviously knew that some things were going to be a problem in terms of safety violations or OSHA violations, potential OSHA violations. And so we walked through, we toured the place. There were some potential OSHA violations. And then when we got to the top, obviously, we saw all of us noticed that there was somebody that looked a lot younger than 18 years old, which is what you're required to be in the state of Iowa to work on a construction job site. And a couple of us went over, and another member of the tour asked the kid how old he was in Spanish. And we had a supervisor come over, assume that we didn't speak any Spanish, and tell the kid in Spanish that he needed to say he was 18 years old. And so obviously that was a huge red flag. We met later with the supervisor for that job site and asked if there was anybody. I asked specifically if there was anybody that was underage, and everybody above age working on this job site. He could not give me a definitive answer about whether everybody was of age on this job site. And, you know, this is just jarring for me. I've heard for years from organized labor and from the unions about how dangerous and some of the tactics that these really big developers use to cut corners and to try and cut costs at the expense of worker safety. I did not realize, and I think even they were shocked to find there was actual potential child labor being used on a project that had $6.5 million, as you alluded to, in TIF money from the city of Cedar Rapids government, and then $17 million in state incentives. from the state of Iowa. And as I said right after, we can't have a dollar of taxpayer money go to projects that cut corners, to developers that cut corners, and obviously to developers that potentially commit crimes and knowingly use underage labor for their projects.
No, it's crazy. And look, even with as bad as, and I do want to talk about the bill that was passed in Iowa, this child labor monstrosity, at 5:42 in the morning. I want to talk about that, but would this still be illegal under the new laws? And is this the direction Iowa's going?
Yeah, I mean, it would, even with the terrible bill the Republicans passed in the middle of the night, or I guess the middle of the morning, this morning, this would still be, you know, based on exactly what the kid's age is, this would most likely be illegal. The bigger question is, why are Republicans choosing now to put, you know, kids back into harm's way, take them out of school and put them in to these dangerous job sites like construction sites? And, you know, thankfully, Rick, as a quick aside, as a result, I think of what happened in Cedar Rapids, there were some amendments to that really terrible bill that made it just a tiny, tiny bit less awful. And so they took out the provisions that would have allowed the kids to work in coal mines and meatpacking plants, which was the worst part of the bill. But they can still do construction at 14, apprenticeships and things like that, and really dangerous roofing, really dangerous kinds of work. But what this legislation does, and we see this is not just in Iowa, it's really bad here in Iowa, this bill they're passing. This is a national trend,
right,
of Republican states not being willing to address the core reason of why they're having workforce shortages and workforce development problems. Here in the state of Iowa, we have the lowest minimum wage. If you look for a ring around us that includes Republican states like Missouri, we still have the lowest minimum wage in the area. If we're not willing to pay workers a living wage, if we put 22 anti-LGBTQ bills that make the business community and tons of potential workers who want to come to Iowa feel unwelcome in this state, if we pass $1 billion voucher bill that takes public dollars from our public education system that used to be the best in the country and give it to private schools, why would people want to come here, Rick?
No, I
and
mean,
they wonder why we have a workforce problem shortage.
No, the fact of the matter is I had said, you know, back when this Iowa bill first came up, that, you know, my kids aren't going to be affected by this. It's going to be people of color. It's going to be, you know, immigrants who are going to be the ones abused by this. And it's not surprising to me that on this construction site, it was someone who spoke Spanish. It's not a shock at all.
No.
My question on this is always, why aren't there any consequences? In my mind, this is a clear violation. You know, the police should have came, that supervisor should have gotten a set of bracelets. The person running the job should have gotten a set of bracelets. We should be locking people up, but that's not how this works, is it?
Yeah, I mean, there are still investigations going on, so I have to be careful about what I can say in terms of potential consequences.
Well, forget about this scenario. About this entirely. This sure. Being nothing. Let's say it was anything else and a different person entirely.
Rick, there should absolutely be consequences for people who use child labor. You're not disagreeing with me. I'm not going to disagree with you on that at all. There should be criminal consequences if you traffic, especially in this case, in a lot of these cases, where it's undocumented kids, undocumented workers. This is not, you know, people want to complain about, some people on the right want to complain about undocumented workers taking their jobs. This is the developers who are squeezing undocumented workers because they know that the undocumented workers have no recourse for action.
Yep.
They'll threaten and tell them, you know, what are you going to do? Go complain to law enforcement? And then we'll call immigration. That's something that is regularly used by different developers to coerce a lot of these undocumented immigrant workers. And it's just shameful.
Yep.
The other thing too is that as a general practice, not just on this job site, not just in the state of Iowa, the concepts of tax evasion and tax fraud and misclassification of workers. We see that all the time, where large developers, for, you know, not just TWG, but other groups, TWG is the developer on this project in Cedar Rapids, but other developers will pay subcontractors and they pay their workers in cash or subcontract them, even though they're working hourly wages or they're working more than 40 hours a week and deserve benefits. But they will misclassify them. They'll pay them in cash. And so they won't have to pay for work comp. They won't have to pay taxes. And so we're losing a lot of tax revenue as well. And a lot of times there will be wage theft. In Iowa alone, there's $900 million a year in wage theft. And a lot of that comes on the backs of immigrants, of people of color, and of working class workers in this state.
Now, what's interesting to me is I know there are people listening and go, well, this is why we need to crack down on illegal, undocumented immigrants. This is the reason we need to go after them. And that's not my take on this. My take on this is the reason we need prevailing wage laws. This is the reason why we need strong labor unions to ensure that that doesn't happen. Because you said it yourself. You went to that union job site and it was done right. There was no one. There were no children working there. There were people who were highly skilled craftspeople doing that job. And I'll bet you there wasn't a spot of anything out of place.
Absolutely. And so I think what the labor movement, I mean, we can talk all day about, you know, what the labor movement has done right and wrong over the past 100, 150 years. I think the labor movement has gotten so much better in terms of thinking about organizing, union organizing, and building a multiracial working class movement in the United States. And that's the primary goal. That includes undocumented workers. That includes workers of color. Because when black workers and brown workers and white workers understand that the boss is trying to divide us, right, and have us fight against each other, they win. And we need to unite as a working class against the boss class across the country. So I think undocumented workers, all workers, are part of that to fight against exploitation in our system.
Yeah.
And so I think that is something that the labor movement has started to understand a lot more. You know, people will say the labor movement traditionally was white, male dominated, and I think it's becoming less and less that way. And I think that's a really good development, especially here in Iowa. We talk about agriculture being such a huge part of our industry. Migrant workers are essential to the agricultural economy of the state of Iowa. And I hope someday that they will be able to form some sort of powerful organizing that there's going to be an organizing movement for those workers here in the state, because they deserve protections and rights like every other worker does as well.
You listen to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Iowa State Representative Sammy Sheets talking about the child labor bill that just passed like thieves in the night. And again, I got to think at some level, Sammy, the more we talk about how bad this legislation is, and I assume most of what was horrible in it is still there. As you said, there were a couple of little tweaks. Is there a moment where the people in Iowa go, we've gone too radical? Is there, because I keep asking that question about the Republican Party as a whole. Is there a moment where Republican voters go, this isn't what we signed up for, 12-year-olds getting married and, you know, kids working on construction sites and so on. Does it go too far?
I mean, 1,000% it goes too far, but I'm going to give some examples of states in our neighborhood, and that's what gives me hope in terms of looking at when other states, Republicans went too far and they paid a price. The state of Kansas eliminated progressive income taxation. They weren't able to fund their schools. Schools were boarding up, closing up, going Monday through Thursday, 4 days a week. And so one of the most essential services that people demanded and expected from their government wasn't being provided. What did they do? Kansas, which is much more conservative than Iowa, has had a Democrat governor for 6 years. The state of Wisconsin, which created or was the first state to develop the most anti-union, anti-worker legislation in the country, the Republican Party that perfected gerrymandering, that took away abortion rights after Roe last year, that Republican Party just had an incredibly important Supreme Court race about 2 weeks ago that decides the future of that state. And a Democrat in Wisconsin won by, I think, 11 or 12 points, or the progressive candidate won by 11 or 12 points. they are paying real prices for their terrible policies, especially when they're going after working people. And I can only think and I can only hope that the array of terrible pieces of legislation, from what I mentioned earlier, the voucher bill, we just kicked 10,000 people off of SNAP benefits, 600 people off of, 600 children off of their health insurance last week with the SNAP bill that was passed in the Iowa legislature. They cannot squeeze working people in the state anymore. And so I'm really hopeful that working people will fight back and will put the Republican Party, you know, and take them out of power. That's the only thing I can hope for. I'm going to do everything that I can to make sure that, that happens.
Well, I'm glad you're there, Sammy. You're doing a great job. Keep up the great work. And I hope you're right. I'm hoping the price will be paid, especially as we continue to point out the horrible that they're doing. I appreciate you taking time for us. Keep up the great work.
Thanks so much, Rick. Have a good night.
You as well. Our good friend, Sammy Sheets. I look at this, and again, I come back to this moment of just how bad some of this legislation has been. And just how I'm hoping there's a price to be paid for it. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Gonna take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Now remember, our GOP friends, they love the children. They love, they care about the children, love the children. And like I said, you got that Senator Moon from Missouri going, I know somebody, I know 12-year-olds are married. And then they're still married. They're 12. And I was thinking about this today. There used to be a joke back when I was in high school. Again, this is a long time ago. It was about congressmen and their, and little boys. It was kind of a cautionary tale for, you know, of old guys hitting on young guys and young girls, that simply asked the question, why don't congressmen use bookmarks? And the answer was because they like their pages bent over. And it was a joke. It was a joke. For those who don't remember, it's been a long time since Congress did away with the pages. You had congressional pages, like high school students or first-year college students who would go and do, like, you know, unpaid intern work. It got them a little experience, but it opened up, you know, to the conservatives, and it was mostly conservatives. You know, the good family, you know, God gaze, you know, that kind of stuff. Caring about the kids so much that, you know, they would sit them on their laps and do all kinds of, never mind. The reason I bring this up, they did away with the page system, so, you know, which is why you don't hear a lot of scandal among the Congress people as much anymore as you used to. The reason I bring this up is there's another wave of this going on, but it's not Congress. It's still in politics. It's in these political advisors and these political gurus who have the power of granting careers and jobs and opportunities. And the most recent one, who has got his, well, thing in a ringer. How many people know who Ali Alexander is? Ali Alexander was, you know, He was it was always weird to me that a guy named originally named Ali Akbar, who changed his name to Ali Alexander, he would be part of the white nationalist movement. It was always weird to me. Just very, very strange. But he's admittedly bisexual. I guess he claims that he battles with same sex attraction. Somehow he's in the conservative, brain trust, if you will. Well, it's now come out because of another, and I think he's outwardly gay as well. Big conservative mouthpiece. Evidently, he feels that he's been mistreated or thrown out of the Yi campaign or some craziness. This Milo Yiannopoulos is now putting out stuff that this Ali Alexander was hitting on teenage boys. And, using this Milo's name to get them to whatever. You let your imagination do whatever it does. So Alexander came out and he said, "I apologize for any inappropriate messages. When I've flirted or others have flirted with me, I have flexed my credentials or dropped corny pickup lines. Other times I've been careless and should have qualified those upcoming to me something identities during flirtatious banter at the start." I don't know what all that means, other than he's admitted that he was hitting on young boys. And this guy is, he's somebody in the Republican circles. And again, you look at all of these names that keep popping up. They're out there talking about how much they care about the kids, how much, the left is grooming. And it's that kind of projection that even my mother, and when I was a small child, say, anybody who's pointing their finger at you, it's got, three more pointing back at you. This is it. They're pointing a finger at somebody else with three fingers pointing back at them. They're like, those are groomers. And look at what they're doing. You point out not too long ago, you had that Matt Schlapp, the guy who was the CPAC guy. He's the chairman of the American Conservative Union, evidently fondling a male campaign staffer, but in the most family values of way. It's crazy. And then the story today that broke. You have this guy, this Kent Sturman, who basically was Ron DeSantis's right-hand guy. He is nowhere. DeSantis is nowhere without this Kent Sturman. This is the brains behind the idiocy. And evidently, he was having, how did they put it? He was accused of sexual misconduct with an underage teen. And the girl's father evidently declined the five-figure hush money deal and reported it to the police. Because this is what conservatives do. They get caught, and then they want to pay it off. I'm thinking Trump. A little hush money. I wonder if he would have tried, if he'd have gotten away with it. I wonder if he'd have tried to write it off on his taxes. But this guy, I'm sure you know where this is going. The hush money wasn't paid. Police were called. So the guy killed himself. There's part of me that goes, and this is going to sound horrible, because it kind of is. But I don't care. I don't care. This guy, horrible. Absolutely horrible. But I find it even more horrible that these are the people who keep saying that they care about the children. We want them to work in dangerous working conditions. Let them get married at 12 years old to adults. And then have them be the ones who are really the groomers. Really the ones who are doing the horrible things that their minds are fixated on. And I've always believed that. If someone's telling me that, there's this going on or that going on, it's a mirror into their soul. It's a mirror into who they are. You've got these people who are just absolutely transphobic. They're out there running around screaming about how, it's an abomination. And my thought is, I'll bet you these guys who are so adamantly opposed to, I'll bet you they tried on mom's dress and they liked it. And now they're fighting it back with all of their heart and soul. They're fighting it back with everything. When the rest of us are just saying, you know what? You want to wear a dress? Knock yourself out. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, Rick at therichsmithshow.com. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1857. That was the day that Clarence Darrow was born in Kinsman, Ohio. Darrow was perhaps the original U.S. labor lawyer. Known to be a friend to underdogs, Darrow once supposedly said, quote, "Lost causes are the only ones worth fighting for." Clarence learned his concern for his fellow man from his family. His childhood home was a stop on the Underground Railroad. In 1887, Clarence moved to Chicago to pursue his law career. But his first big client was not an underdog. In fact, he ended up working as the general counsel for the Chicago and Northwestern Railroad. But then the 1894 strike by Pullman workers led him to quit his job. And instead, he defended Eugene V. Debs, the president of the American Railway Union. Debs had been imprisoned for his support of the striking Pullman workers. The case went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. Although Darrow lost, his reputation as a lawyer for labor was sealed. Over the years, he would go on to successfully defend Big Bill Haywood, leader of the Industrial Workers of the World, when he was accused of murder. Darrow's most well-known case, however, was the Scopes trial. Darrow defended a high school teacher, John Scopes, who had the audacity to teach evolution to high school students in Tennessee, something that was quite controversial at the time. The trial became a major news event. 200 reporters from across the nation covered the case. Darrow won, which was seen as a major shift towards the teaching of science in the classroom. Clarence Darrow is still beloved in Chicago, which holds a ceremony each year remembering his work as a champion of the people. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Way to go, Wisconsin! In a momentous progressive win, voters there elected County Judge Janet Protasiewicz to their state Supreme Court. She thumped a mega-maga Republican by 11 points in a pivotal race, ending a dark decade of unbridled right-wing partisan extremism by that court's GOP majority. But the vote has profound implications, reaching far beyond the Badger State. Its deeper meaning was brought home to me on Election Eve, when the Republican candidate, a Trump-hugging, gerrymandering, anti-choice lawyer, complained that, quote, "doing a statewide campaign is kind of hard." Well, yes, but to paraphrase a song by a band called the Austin Lounge Lizards, campaigning is hard, but it's harder when you're stupid. Not that the lawyer lacked intellect, but smart is as smart does. What the swing state of Wisconsin showed is that this right-wing candidate and other arrogant GOP fanatics are stupid if they think people won't care that, one, Republicans are shutting people out of the voting booth, and two, they're running as ideological autocrats, promising to use state power to outlaw the inherent right of a woman to make her own deeply personal decision about abortion. Moreover, Judge Janet's big win sends a gut-check message to meek Democratic Party officials and donors who continually admonish candidates and local activists to be middle-of-the-roaders, compromising the people's little-d Democratic principles in hopes of winning some Republican votes. Protasiewicz was straight with voters, proudly campaigning to be a pro-choice, pro-worker, pro-democracy justice. This is Jim Hightower saying, because of both the integrity and clarity of her message, she generated a record turnout, greatly increased participation by women and young voters, and, especially noteworthy, made significant inroads in rural and working-class counties that had been considered Trump country. She showed that if Democrats stand up for the people, hello, people will stand up for Democrats. The Hightower Radio Lowdown is made possible by you subscribers to Jim Hightower's Lowdown.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, just as I was looking forward to opening arguments today, Fox News didn't go ahead and settle the defamation case. I was looking forward to some fun, some entertainment, more juicy tidbits coming from behind the curtain. But here's the thing that gets me, and this is where, you know, you're looking at the amount of money, $787 billion. $787 billion. That's half of the $1.6 billion they were asking for. And the question is it because the, you know, the judge thought that they were less than truthful, otherwise known as lying? Or was it that a former producer had even more information? I don't know, but here to share some thoughts on maybe where this is, where it's going, and all of that, I've asked John Neffel to come talk with us. John's a senior rapid response writer over at Media Matters for America. MediaMatters.org is their website. John, thanks for taking time for us.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me, Rick.
So let's start with the shock part. I got to tell you, I'm shocked. I was surprised. I know Fox would want to settle. Still trying to figure out why Dominion settled.
Yeah, I was there in the courtroom today, and you know, there was this extended afternoon break that just kept kind of dragging out. And then at about a little bit before 4 p.m., the judge came back and quietly said the case has been resolved. And it was almost the definition of ending with a whimper in some ways. I think that it makes a lot of sense, like you said, for Fox to settle. This trial was scheduled for 6 weeks. With every passing day that this story was in the headlines, not only were we learning more about the behind the scenes goings on of Fox in the period in question, in 2020 and the immediate aftermath of the election, but that every day this was in the headlines, it was a reminder to the larger public that Fox is not trustworthy and that their business model relies on telling their viewers lies.
But John, fair and balanced, fair and balanced.
Right. You know, you can get that tattooed on your forehead and it doesn't make it so. and so from their perspective, I think that, you know, it made sense for Fox to kind of walk up to the very edge of the cliff here. The jury had been impaneled. There was a jury. There were alternates. There were, you know, human beings who thought that they were going to be sitting in this courtroom for the next 6 weeks of their life doing their civic duty. And Fox News got to the edge and they said, you know what? It's not worth it for us. It's not worth it for us to potentially put Rupert Murdoch on the stand because we've already gotten Rupert's depositions in the pretrial motions in the pretrial phase of this. And Murdoch himself admitted that he could have put a stop to all of this early on. And he even told the New York Post to do that exact thing in an editorial. His son, Lachlan, has a much, much closer degree of editorial control over Fox coverage than the company likes to put forward. There, what we got in some of these pretrial exhibits is that Lachlan was giving notes on the ticker at the bottom of the screen. So you cannot get more minute in terms of editorial direction than that. And I think that having anyone from the Murdoch family on the stand would have been a massive public service and obviously a huge liability from Fox's point of view.
Yeah, no, out of that whole thing, you know, Rupert Murdoch gave the most important line out of all of it. And it's what I've said all along. It's not about red or blue. It's about green. It's always about the money. And then you just have the guy in charge of all of the, you know, all of the strings saying, yeah, we didn't care. We don't care about fair and balanced. We don't care about you. We care about us and we care about money. And that's what's important. And that's why I thought Dominion should have just kept going with this. And I know it is about the money, $787 million. But still, this, I guess there's that purest part of me. You know, when you've got someone in that position, you finish them off. But thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, that line when that you were just referencing, when Murdoch says it's not about red or blue, it's about green, that comes from the part of the deposition when he was justifying putting Mike Lindell, my pillow CEO, Mike Lindell, on the air for an interview on Tucker Carlson's show, the network's marquee show, and as people may remember, Tucker Carlson bleeds advertisers because he has a history of promoting white nationalist talking points and things that really much of the public finds abhorrent. And Mike Lindell remains one of Fox News's main advertisers. And so here's Rupert Murdoch saying that we're going to put Mike Lindell on the air. And the crucial background for all this is that Mike Lindell is the poster child for the election denial movement. If people aren't aware of that, in addition to his you know, pillow operation, he has hosted these totally bunk cyber symposiums that present this just nonsense, quote unquote, evidence about election fraud. It's all complete nonsense. Tucker Carlson knew it. Everyone at Fox knew it. They all knew that that's what he was going to say when he went on Tucker's show. And that's exactly what he did said. And right from Murdoch's own lips is it's because it's about the green. It's not about red or blue.
Yeah. Now, the Lindell thing was hysterical. I got to tell you, I watched some of the Frank TV, you know, hours that he did that 100-hour marathon of insane, whatever that was. I watched a portion of that. And pure entertainment if a train wreck is something that you're into.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and with Lindell, there's this sort of ongoing feud that he has with Fox News where they will book him, they won't book him. But what was fascinating is that in one of the earlier hearings that I attended for summary judgment, which means that each party in the case was asking the judge to resolve it before it went to a jury, Fox News defended putting Mike Lindell on air because they said he was so incoherent he couldn't have defamed Dominion. Fox News's own counsel said that a reasonable viewer listening to Mike Lindell wouldn't know what he was talking about, and therefore he couldn't have made a false statement of fact with actual malice because he was so far out of left field. And so this is Fox News's way of defending their editorial decisions, is that it's too incoherent to even be taken as a factual statement. So that gives you the sort of sense of the good and bad faith we're dealing with here.
So their argument basically is Fox TV is really like the old school Mad Magazine. Can't believe it's all satire. You know, nobody actually takes that stuff seriously. But then again, that wasn't their defense of Tucker Carlson early on, that he's not news, he's entertainment, so he doesn't have to be honest.
Exactly. They sort of trot out this line repeatedly about the primetime people are the viewers understand that it's opinion and editorial, and so that they're not presenting news. Sometimes, yeah, there's this sense that even Fox acknowledges that Tucker is not reliable. And what Fox has done for years now is pretend that there's some kind of hard and fast line between the straight news kind of day side reporting and the opinion shows in the evening, especially. And what a lot of the pretrial evidence and exhibits showed is that the so-called straight news side was completely complicit in this. Many of them knew that these election conspiracy theories had no basis, that they were false, but they still showed up on dayside programming regardless. And so I think that Fox News is often kind of too cute by half when they try to make these legalistic parsings from one thing to the other. But everyone who watches the network, I think, takes the network in as an entire package. And that was one of the elements of Dominion's argument, is that for the viewer, you're not parsing, this person is a guest, they're being asked a question by an interviewer. You sort of take in the whole thing as a singular product. And I think that that's the best and the only way to understand Fox News is, right, is holistically as this deceit machine.
No, and that what the reality is it's the news, because they're creating the news. And I always thought their argument that Tucker was entertainment was interesting, because, now again, I'm not a lawyer, But, you know, the common sense in me goes, well, you know, the First Amendment, you know, protects the press in a lot of ways by parsing them out and saying, no, they're not news. You open yourself up to these kind of things. And I'm shocked that it hasn't happened already before now. Because they've done a lot of this stuff over the years. So the question I come back to is, now that they've settled this, there's another lawsuit coming. There's another lawsuit, I guess, this Smartmatic voting machines. Are we expecting a settlement there? And then won't that just open it up for other people to go and attack them?
Right. Well, there is a sort of funny moment outside the courthouse today. Some of the journalists were sharing in the gallows humor that the press often indulges in, and I overheard a couple people say, you know, I'll see you next time at Smartmatic. It'll be the exact same fact pattern. You know, so people were joking about how you're not going to have to read the legal briefs for Smartmatic because it's the exact same thing. Who knows what that case will bring. Smartmatic has said that I think their statement in response to this was, Dominion exposed many of Fox's lies, will expose the rest. I mean, I would be surprised if that case ended up significantly different than this. I think that this is probably pretty close to a template for how Fox and Smartmatic is going to go. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it'll go to trial, but I wouldn't put money on it. Wow. And as far as opening the door to the future, I think what it opens the door to is it opens the door to Fox to backslide into presenting almost the exact same set of conspiracy theories that were in question here, but just leaving out the word Dominion, leaving out the word Smartmatic. And already this year, Media Matters did a study. By early March, Fox News had put forward 50 lies about the elections, about the midterms, about January 6th cases where they Fox personalities will say that the FBI is manipulating elections. And so what we're seeing already is Fox News reverting to this exact same kind of conspiracy theory, election denialism that was the heart of the matter here. And I think that this has given them a license to continue to do that, but just to make sure that they don't have a specific party who's going to have standing to bring a specific lawsuit like this. But I think that that's the most likely outcome from right. This, unfortunately.
Yeah, don't defame just one, defame them all.
Right, exactly. There is a sort of like, if it's so broad that no one has a particularized standing, maybe you can get away with it.
It's crazy. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show with John Neffel. John's a senior rapid response writer over at Media Matters, mediamatters.org, their website, if you want to take a look at this. Now, the thing that bothers me is, like a lot of these settlements, is Fox admitting any wrong in this? Will there be anything on the F channel saying, hey, we were wrong, we lied to you viewers, sorry? Any of that happening?
As of right now, no. And their initial statement was a very, very squirrely, weaselly way of addressing the facts that have already been ruled on by the judge. The judge already in the case, as part of the summary, the earlier hearings that I was referencing, the judge already found that nothing that Fox News said about Dominion in this period in question after the 2020 election, nothing was true. Full stop. This was already found by the judge. This is the judge's ruling. And Fox News, in their statement, acknowledged that the judge found certain parts were mistakes incorrect. Exactly. We're completely in the mistakes were made territory. And Fox News's statement there was no admission of guilt. There was no admission of accountability. There's no reckoning whatsoever. I think that Howard Kurtz may have like acknowledged it on Fox News this afternoon as part of like a media report or something. But there's as of right now, we've heard that there is no plan for on-air talent to read apologies. it's virtually impossible to imagine the primetime lineup giving an apology unless it was ordered by Murdoch.
Yeah. No, see, this always gets me. The left, anyone on the left, if something like this were to happen or anything happens, there's always a teary-eyed apology. They go on this, oh, I'm so sorry tour, and they listening take arrows her, from yeah. every direction. Republican, the Fox News and those folks, they're just going to move right along like nothing happened.
Yeah, well, and the key background to all of this, the sort of like, behind the scenes media business angle to all of this, is that Fox is currently negotiating what are called carriage fees or affiliate fees that they negotiate with cable providers. And second to ESPN, Fox News charges the most fees from cable providers. So what that means is that even if Fox News didn't sell any ads, they would still be a profitable media company because they have convinced cable providers that their audience is robust enough to warrant these exorbitant fees that totaled nearly $2 billion with a B in 2022 alone. So that means that every single person in the United States who has cable, who pays for it, is paying Fox to pay out this settlement. So even if you never watch Fox, even if you never buy MyPillow, even if you don't have anything to do with Fox or any of their advertisers, if you pay for cable and Fox News is included, you are paying Fox News through these carriage fees. Yeah. And right now, Fox is renegotiating an increase in these fees. So I think that from Fox's point of view, what they have learned is that their business model is to continue to tell their viewers lies, to keep them loyal, to make sure that they don't go to Newsmax or OAN or these other kind of nascent competitors. And that the more they're loyal and devoted to Fox News, the more Fox News can leverage that audience to these cable providers, so that even if they face boycotts from advertisers, they still have this huge revenue stream coming in separately. So until that is addressed, Fox News, I think, sees this as the cost of doing business, the same as a massive financial institution after 2008 sees an SEC violation as a cost of doing business. Oh, you're going to give me a $1 billion fine? Well, I'm a transnational bank. Like, okay, I'll just profit off this. I'll just keep the remaining profit. And I think that Fox News is basically treating this the same way. It's a cost of doing business for telling their viewers what they want to hear, and that's what is going to keep them profitable until that changes.
Yeah, that's the numbers eye popping, but I don't know that it's enough. It's one of those things I just don't know that's enough. So last question I've got for you. You know who I really feel sorry for in all this? The jurors. The jurors have got to be fairly bummed out. This was kind of like, this could have been like a golden ticket. There were going to be 12 or 13 books written out of this because of all of the craziness that was going to be on display. This was going to be, for me, watching this would have been a comedy display of watching Fox trying to justify all of the garbage that they've spewed and then try and dance around the fact, well, it's just entertainment or it's just about the money.
Right. I mean, when you think about the jurors and the alternates, that they would have had a front row seat to one of the most interesting First Amendment media stories in half a century. On the other hand, as anyone who's ever done jury duty knows, having to take off work and find childcare and all the rest of it is a serious hardship. So there's probably some people who are thrilled to not have to be.
Let me think about that.
I'm dealing with this.
I'm gonna take time off to sit on a jury of a case nobody knows about, or a case that I'm going to be able to write a book and probably make $1 million. I don't know. I think I'm going with the book.
Yeah. We'll do a joint authorship if you and I get impaneled together.
There you go. So the Smartmatic thing, real quick. When does that start? What are we expecting that to begin and all of that, so we can mark it on the calendar?
I don't have a date for that. I don't know that a date has been set, but it's very much in the works. And I have to imagine that this is is gonna accelerate at the very least the media interest in it. But I'm not sure that there's a calendar date set yet.
Well, when that happens, we want to have you come back and share some more thoughts on where this is going and all that. But John, I appreciate the time.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
Great stuff, John Neffel. Make sure you check out John's work over at MediaMatters.org, where he's the senior rapid response writer for the folks over at Media Matters. Going to take a quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. Tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute. So more fun and entertainment coming out of Clarence Thomas. Wow. I think we've all got the wrong friends, or just maybe the wrong job. Maybe that's more like it, because we're supposed to believe that, you know, all of these rich people did all of this wonderful benevolent stuff for Clarence and Jenny Thomas. Took them on $500,000 vacations, bought up mom's house and renovated it. A whole bunch of other real estate dealings on the other side. You know, gifts and presents and trips and oh my. Just because he's got a great sense of humor. He's got a great sense of humor, evidently. Anybody buying that? And what I find interesting is the silence of the right. And the only people who are peeking around the corners are the Lauren Boberts and the Fringe. Who, Clarence Thomas is an American hero. Yeah, because, well, he's stuck it to the little guy. I don't know what the... this would all be criminal stuff. Now, what's interesting is, you know, when you do your disclosures, you're supposed to mark, you know, how much money, assets, how much this, how much that. There's supposed to be some, a little bit of transparency. Evidently, he marked the box that Ginny didn't get any money whatsoever. Nothing. Zero. And yet, oddly enough, we all know she's been doing work for Tea Party groups for years. I mean, this is, you know, she's not little Miss Homemaker. She's not baking cookies waiting for Charlie to come home so she can pinch his little cheeks or whatever it is they do. And see, I'm still tainted from watching the confirmation hearings back in the old days. Anyone who remember the Coke can with the little curlies all over it? I seem to remember that. But this is one of those moments where you go, if it's you or me, if it's any average person, any working person, and you were to stand before him in court and go, oh, I didn't know any better. He's on the freaking Supreme Court. This is one of those moments. When I was a kid, my mother would always say, because it was the line, ignorance is no excuse. You know, being stupid is no excuse. Ignorance of the law is no excuse for breaking it. Should that not, and I'm just throwing this out here now, should that not apply double to the guy who interprets the laws? Or can he just go, you know, I interpret that differently now that it's me? It's quite remarkable. And here's the thing. While I was in D.C. yesterday, I talked to a number of people who said, look, this Clarence Thomas thing, it's going to get a lot uglier and a lot worse because there's a lot. Evidently, the criming was no secret. This has been going on for decades. We're just hearing drips and drabs because finally reporters have gone, hey, there might be a story here. And understand, when the shark is circling, or the sharks are circling, they are most certainly going to find their prey. Now, the question is, are we so badly divided that we can't see what really is going on? that this guy just broke the rules, was bought and paid for from the start? Or will the right dig in even more? Because I'm looking at it going, how do I get friends like that? Want to hear your thoughts, though. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast wherever you find your favorite podcast. You will find ours. I got to know, what's the thought on the Clarence? Thanks for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to the talk of Green Bay.
WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay.
And always streaming on the Civic
ABC
Media app.
ABC News.